Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's January 9, 2012, and this is episode 317. Many of you let me know how much you enjoyed our interview with MBP community member Graham Morgan in episode 305, and some people asked me to do more. So today I'm really pleased to have with me via Skype Dan Newcomb. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, Martin, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks. It's really, really nice to have you on.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me on. It's a great opportunity.
Not at all. I didn't check the number, but really old hands, you know, long-time listeners will probably remember you we did a round table many moons ago, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I think that was with Landon and Forrest.
I think it was just Landon, actually. I don't know if Forrest was on that one.
Oh, okay, maybe not.
But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but it's really, really nice to have you on the show again. So we've got a full probably hour or so of talking. We're going to bring your brother David in later as well. I'm really looking forward to it. So let's jump in and start to ask you some questions.
Sure, fire away.
Okay, so first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are. Well, we know many people will know from the assignments. You've always, pretty much most months, usually towards the end, you do sort of, you manage to put in some amazing assignment photos. So we'll look at a few of those as well. But give us a little bit of background on who is Dan Newcomb and, you know, where you're based, etc.
Sure. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'm not usually home because I work on the road quite a bit. But just an avid photographer. I guess a lot of people might know me as Mr. Nikon, or Nikon, as you might say, Martin. I guess it would actually be the proper saying, since you're in Japan. I guess, is it Nikon? Is that officially what it is?
In Japan, it is, yeah. I mean, here in Japan, it's Nikon, and it's basically... the thing is, though, it's like sushi, you know, or bokeh even. You know, a lot of these Japanese terms that have made their way into English, they kind of get localized along the way, so I don't think there's any right or wrong way to say it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Okay. I probably can't change now anyways, because I am a Nikon guy, so that's the way I say it, I guess. But I'm an avid photographer, been doing it. Picked up my first camera probably 30 years ago. Wow. In grade 11, in high school there, and haven't looked back since. But it's always a pleasure to at least get into the assignments each month. Definitely have missed a few, and definitely had some bad submissions too. They're not all good.
I don't remember any. It's you always amaze me with your, you know, your imagination and your vision. It's just, it's really, it's always a pleasure to see. And I can pretty much always tell which one's your image as well.
Oh, damn, I'm being typecasted.
in a good way. Okay. You've got a great style.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you very much. It's always a goal of mine each month to at least attempt the assignment. Yeah. Often I'm very busy, but I certainly try to make time for it. Yeah, well, and it's I'm always amazed at everyone else's submissions as well. I mean, it's just a great community for sure. I mean, a lot of talent out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been incredibly fortunate to sort of to be able to attract enough photographers to make it what it is, you know, there's so much dedication, and it's like I often hear from you as well, you know, you're out there on the last day of the month trying to pull something in, and it doesn't always work, but it's always very much appreciated, and you know, I'm sure that everyone else will agree that, you know, you're submissions always lighten up the, you know, and actually, you know what, I was gonna say lighten it up, but that might be a little bit misleading when we look at the zombies are coming later,
but that's true. I do have a dark side, but
people nothing to worry about though. For those that don't follow the assignments, we'll take a look at that shortly, and you'll see what we mean, but it's there's certainly a dark side lurking in there. Yep. So you told us you use Nikon cameras, and what sort of other gear do you use? What's your general sort of your gear lineup like?
Yeah, I've got three bodies right now, a Nikon D300S, a Nikon D700, and a D3S for my main cameras, I guess.
Okay.
My point and squirt, or my point and shoot, I guess I should say. It's a Nikon P7000. It's a good little point and shoot. Okay. And lenses, all Nikon lenses, the usual stuff like the 24-70 2.8, the 70-200 2.8. I've got a 300 2.8, and my 10-pound baby boy is the 600mm f4. I know you have one of those. They're just amazing. Not, well, you have the Canon version, I guess, but amazing lenses. And then I guess a couple other odd little lenses in there. Some a manual focus f1.4 and tilt shift 24mm. And I don't know, some other odds and ends, but that's basically the lineup of lenses and cameras, and you know, the usual tripods and flashes and filters and all the other things that make up a 40-pound pack.
For your long lens, do you use a gimbal head or a ball head?
I do use a gimbal head. Custom bracket, I believe, makes it.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're familiar with those ones or not.
I'm not. I'd like to take a look. It's I'm still using a really old Wimberly, not the Wimberly 2, the old Wimberly, the first one, which is a little bit heavier and slightly less rigid than the 2. But
interesting.
Sorry,
my phone's ringing.
No problem.
Jim, I have to go. Bye bye. Sorry.
That was quick.
Answer the phone, right? Sorry.
That was pretty funny. Are you sure you're okay? You can take it if you need to.
No. It's a guy from work, but I don't think he listens to the podcast, so I think I'm fine. but although he is taking pictures these days, so it's a good thing. I'm converting a lot of people into photographers at work, so it's always. But with the head, actually, this custom bracket one that I have, the interesting thing with it is it breaks down. The actual head breaks down into three parts, so you can actually pack it into into smaller bits into a backpack.
That's nice. That's so good.
That was one thing that kind of jumped out at me that I thought was kind of interesting with it. But I'm still getting used to it, and I've picked up a couple tips listening to you, of course, with like trying to stabilize the lens by putting your hand far out on the lens when you're taking a picture and stuff. So
I'm
still learning with the 600. It is a beast, but it definitely turns heads when you're walking around with it. So
yeah, they're like bazookas. It's not easy to get around.
I'm a little worried to go to an airport with one, so yeah. Security these days, you know.
Oh yeah. So let's see it before we move on and take a look at your images. Is there any, or are there any photographers or artists, anybody that's influenced your work?
Oh, boy. Well, early on, I guess everyone is taught Ansel Adams' work. And that's, of course, he's always been there, I guess.
Yeah.
Although I don't do a lot of landscapes and things these days. But, I mean, if I see something nice, I'll take it. But it's not my main focus. But it's actually just these days, a lot of unnamed photographers, I guess. Just looking at people's work online and just clicking away. I've found quite a few nice submissions from people on that 500px or Pixel website. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I mean, I could probably, if I went to my favorites, I could probably tell you some people's names, but I don't know if we want to do that. But just some amazing work out there. I mean, I guess Weston, Adams, it's tough. But the other thing too is I do like listening to lots of different podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, of course yours, but interviews and stuff. And it's interesting when you're interviewing a photographer or someone else's and getting to know their work through this medium. It's amazing.
I totally understand what you're saying. There are so many people out there that are making great images. It's an amazing time, and the ability to view them so easily now without having to run out and buy books every time, and that's always a bit hit and miss. So I totally agree.
Absolutely. And even like on the members group there, Landon, I'm always amazed with his photography, how precise he is with exposure, and he's just like very, very excellent technically.
Yeah.
And Marissa, her wildlife images, I don't know if she lives in a very populated swamp, but she's always got just amazing bird photos and things.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so as we've come round back to the members gallery, and you know, the people that we, the amazing photographers that we have there, of which of course you're a total sort of, you know, you've always been there, and you've always been amazing people with your work. So let's take a look at a few of those. And what I'll do, just to let people know, is that these will be embedded in the Enhanced podcast, but also they will be in the blog post, which will be at mbp.ac/317. And I will also embed a few videos and things that we'll look at later as well. So just keep that in mind, as if you're listening on a computer and you don't have the images there, if you just go to that blog post, you'll be able to see them. And what we're going to do is, first of all, we're going to take a look at one of your recent assignment. this just kills me. So this is, the title is "The Zombies Are Coming." Can you tell us a little bit about this image?
Sure. The assignment, I believe it was June, and it was the assignment theme was a frame within a frame.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was in Whitehorse in the Yukon, working on the road, as I usually do. And basically, I think it stemmed from, besides my dark side, which maybe we'll touch on a little later, but I had just signed up for Netflix, and I did a marathon of all the top rated zombie movies. And so I had kind of zombies on my brain. So that's kind of where this started from, I guess. But the actual image, as I often do, is I go to like a dollar store for props and stuff. So long story short, the hotel room was just kind of interesting to begin with. And then I thought, okay, well, I could probably use this window. And that's a natural frame within a frame.
Yeah.
And so then I just had to start thinking of props and stuff. So the dollar store is usually my first stop. And so I picked up some black cardboard and stuff, and traced my hand on a black cardboard and cut it out to make the hands of the zombies, and kind of estimated the size of my head. It was, to do the heads and stuff. And then I picked up a fake gun and a baseball bat, because baseball bats are good when the bullets run out for the undead. And then, it does sound kind of creepy, doesn't it? Anyway, so on the right-hand side of the screen, I've got just some canned food and bottled water that I had in the truck anyways. But so it just kind of came together that way, and I just set up the camera with a remote, infrared remote with a self-timer, and just tried a couple different poses. But I was trying to get a little more depth with the between the hands and the head to give it some depth. So I actually put the hands on the inside of the window, taped them on, the heads, I tried to get a little more depth, so I rolled up some cardboard into tubes and then taped that onto the heads on the back side of the window to try to get a bit of separation, but it didn't quite do it, so I cheated a little bit in post. I blurred the heads a bit just to give it a bit of depth, but I don't know if it works or not.
Yeah. It works incredibly. I didn't even realize, because this was right around the time when I was probably in hospitals last year. So
it was. Yeah.
I don't actually recall reading the backstory for this, but I thought that there were people out there. The only thing that made me wonder if there weren't was the fact that one of their thumbs is hanging off.
Yeah.
And it was, so I'm thinking, so he either actually broke someone's thumb or. Yeah, and I really just thought that there were people out there and you'd done a bit in post or something.
Just cut out cardboard.
It just shows you, though. I mean, you always go to so much trouble to set up a scene, and it's just the results are always pretty amazing. So
it was great, at least this time it was great to have like a whole day off. Basically, I don't usually have days off. I sometimes go weeks without a day off. So this was about a week before the assignment deadline, and I just said, okay, I'm gonna do the photo today, and got her done. But it turned out okay, I guess. It the only weird thing was the lady wanted to clean the room, so I told her to go away because I didn't want to explain all these zombies trying to get in the window. So other than that, it worked out okay.
It worked out brilliant. I thought that because obviously with the websites we can't see details as well as we'd like, but I thought that you'd got like bottles of liquor on the side there, and it was so, rather than water. I mean, I can see it now, you say.
Actually, the one on the very far right is a bottle of Bailey's, but
I thought I recognized the bottle. But yeah, it's just the vision that you had to put it together, and then the idea of putting the stuff on the windows and everything, it comes across really, really well. What do you use for the black and white conversion?
SilverFX Pro.
Yeah,
classic. And then I usually, I think I downloaded a preset titanium tint. Mm. It wasn't one that normally comes with it, but SilverFX Pro had some add-ons or whatever, and that's where I got it from. I seemed to like that one. And I do like black and white a lot, because I do have problems with being partially colorblind. So you'll see a lot of my photos going to black and white, because I just find it so much easier to work with.
I remember you saying that before. Yeah, it's it's pretty. So do you not see certain colors, or do they get replaced by other colors, or is that?
I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. how would I know? Just kidding. The greens, I have problems with greens usually. Like greens, purples, I don't know, it kind of gets muddled up. And things like, if I'm driving down a street at night and there's a green light, it just kind of blends in with the regular street lights.
Oh, so I see.
Thank God I can see the orange and the red. So
yeah, so you can tell when you've got to stop.
Or speed up. Yeah.
Let's move on to the next image. And this is a classic. This was the homage. I believe this was the homage assignment.
Correct.
So yep. Cabbage leaf. It's a classic. It should be right up there.
It is a class. I mean, the original is a classic from Edward Weston.
Yeah.
That month, my original thought was to do the Weston's Green Pepper number 29. Hmm. But the small town, again, I was working up north, northern British Columbia, had two supermarkets to choose from. And if you've ever really studied that pepper number 29, it's a beautifully deformed pepper. Yeah. And I kind of realized when I was at the store that I'm not going to find a beautifully deformed pepper in a modern store these days. So so I, in the back of my brain, I was like, oh, he did a cabbage leaf.
Yeah.
And so I just grabbed a cabbage leaf. Of course, this is the last day of the assignment. Anyways, I'm a bit of a procrastinator that way. But so then I noticed this. I found a cabbage. I had a cabbage and I was walking out, and I noticed a Savoy cabbage. And it had all the crinkly, real deep lines. And I thought, oh, well, it's not the same as Weston used, but I'll use that one, because I figured I could try to get the lighting right. But so since it was about minus, 30 out that day, which it normally is that time of year, and I was like, well, obviously not going to take anything outside. So I brought it into the hotel room, and I noticed on the original that he had a bit of texture. It was a dark background that he used. I mean, I basically pulled up the image that he had, and I tried to copy it the best I could, and I used my laptop case, my hard laptop case, and put the cabbage leaf on it. But the hardest part was trying to figure out the lighting.
Mm. How did you light this?
Well, I was thinking that to me, when I first looked at his image, it was like, I thought it was a very harsh lighting. So I had a flash, but I didn't really want to try it or use it. But so I used a flashlight from far away, trying to get a hard light, small light source from far away, hard lighting. Tried that, couldn't do it. So then I ended up, I got one of the towels from the bathroom of the hotel. It was a white towel and a flashlight, and I shined it. I basically shined a flashlight on the towel and moved the towel around the cabbage leaf to do light painting. Basically, I think it was a 20 second exposure. Wow. And it was above, I guess, as you look at the image, it was the light source. I started on the right-hand side and moved my way around the back. Mm. And I also had another towel reflecting a bit on the front. So basically it was light painting. And that was the thing. It took me about, 30, 40 tries to actually get this thing to look like it did.
That's dedication for you again.
Yeah. Plus, I was in the hotel room, had nothing better to do anyways. But it was tough.
The light is really soft. And it's, I've not managed to take a look at the backstory for this one, but I don't think I did. I don't remember, but it's really great hearing you talk us through that, because you can see from the image that it was you know, the light looks as though it's enveloping it. It almost looks like a really good quality window light, like the sort that I'm sure Weston had in his studio. You know, so you've got this beautiful, beautiful window light to me, and the light's enveloping around, and that obviously now listening to you say that, I can understand the way you sort of painted around, and you'd got the reflection from the towel, and it's an ingenious way to make beautiful light, and you know the texture of the cabbage leaf is brought out beautifully, and then of course the Silver Effects Pro again, I guess, conversion.
Yes, exactly.
Is it's classic, literally. It should be up there with Weston's original.
I don't know about that. I think I saw someone mention on a comment, I guess on Flickr or something, hey, that's better than the original, but I don't want to take that much credit, no way. Well, but I mean, Weston is an icon, so no, I was just copying his work.
That's the difficult thing. I tend to agree, probably quality-wise, and even how it looks, I prefer this version. But this version wouldn't have existed unless Weston had made the original. And
exactly.
And that was part of the homage thing, you know, to really sort of try to reproduce or to get your vision from or inspiration from some of the original masters. And you know, it's like it's easy to say, oh yeah, that's better than the original. And again, I think it is. But it's you've always got to respect the fact that there was someone who's got to do it first.
And, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's. But it is a beautiful image. I mean, I would love a print of this. We might have to do a print exchange then.
Hey, maybe I could. Yeah, maybe. You've got some beautiful images. Hey, we'll talk offline about that.
Yeah, I mean, let's do that.
But I think you're a much better printer than I am. Anyway, I do have a 24-inch printer, but I really haven't spent the time to nail it down like you have. But
I'm sure you're being modest. I'm sure you've been.
My brother might have seen some of my images in there. No, anyways, we'll just leave that alone for now.
We'll ask him. I'll tell you what, let's let the cat out of the bag. David is actually on mute, unless he's gone to the toilet or something. He's on mute at the moment until we bring him in. So if you can hear
I'm here,
us,
David. Actually.
Yeah, here we go.
I'm here. So I'm on the toilet.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Oh no!
So to save confusion, everybody, because you guys sound similar as well. The voice you just heard is David, Dan's brother, who we're going to be talking to more later. But welcome to the show as well, David.
Oh, hi! I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
It's my pleasure, I assure you. So tell us how good a printer Dan is.
I haven't seen any of his prints. Oh wait, no, I got one on the wall. Yeah, it's all right.
I reckon he's just being overly modest.
Oh, negative, negative.
No, it's good. Yeah, he just doesn't have. He's not home all that often, so he doesn't have a lot of time to play with it, I guess. But it looks good.
As I thought.
I'll give you $5 later for saying that. Okay.
Make it ten. But this is an interesting conversation so far. It's like hotel room photography 101.
It is. You seem to do all of these in the hotel room, so or around on your travels at some point.
Happens to be where I am most of the time, I guess. But
Well, that's it. I mean, being able to sort of to take the time out from your busy work and do this sort of thing is one important thing that I'm sure a lot of people. That's a challenge that a lot of people have. And also the fact that, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I keep trying to push the assignments more, that the fact that you've got something to think about each month and you, something that you do, thankfully for the community, you do spend time on is another good driving force behind it. So, being able to make the time and actually execute on that stuff is great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's great for me too, because I do work on the road, like I keep referring to, I guess, but I do work in telecommunications, and I spend about 80% of my time on the road, or maybe even a little more. But and I usually work alone. Maybe that's partly of the dark images. But anyways, it gives me something to think about through the month. And I do a lot of windshield time. Like I spend a lot of time driving down crazy roads and stuff. And it's always great to listen to podcasts. And it gives you something to think about for sure.
Yeah. So let's move on to the RGB, the balloons shot. This is a really old one, but I picked this out because I do remember your amazing backstory about this and how you used the triggers and things. So tell us a little bit about this image and how this came about.
Sure. This was, I believe, for the 50 millimeter assignment, and which was nice. It was like a wide open assignment. Basically, all you had to do was use a 50 mil lens. Yeah. I did try, I think I had a couple different things in mind that month, but I think we were even in New Mexico on a trip, my brother and I, but I just couldn't find anything good to shoot with my 50 mil for some reason. And so when I got home, I was like in panic mode, and I always wanted to do some high-speed trigger shots. And basically what I did to actually set up the shot, I did try a couple different methods, but for this image, I ended up looking online for a schematic to make a sound trigger that you can connect to a camera. That's one good thing with the Nikon cameras. They have this 10-pin connector on the front, and basically you can buy a little adapter that has banana clips that you can attach anything you want to as long as it makes contact.
Yeah.
And so long story short, I built this little circuit. It was pretty easy little circuit, and I set up the balloons for... I figured RGB because I don't know. I was setting up three balloons and I went, well, yeah, red, green, blue. Yeah. Might as well do it that way.
Yeah.
So the actual image that you're looking at is actually upside down. That's the way I posted it. So the red, green, blue is that way. Mm. Basically, the balloons were hanging from a string.
Yeah.
With a black background. I had a flash set up, the sound trigger, and I shot it with a pellet gun in my basement here. And that's basically the image. It fired the flash automatically. And actually, you know what? I think I did have the sound trigger actually connected to the flash, and I just did a long exposure on the camera in a darkened room, and the sound trigger actually triggered the flash. I believe that's the way I did that one.
It's very ingenious. Again, you know, the idea for the shot, and then the, you know, having the technical ability to go out and build a sound trigger. It's just, that's pretty cool. Is that the sort of thing that you would do in your job, or are you just a generally sort of technically person?
Well, I am a technician, I guess, but and I do work on like microwave radios and cell sites and things like that, and I can talk to you about that later if you want, but kind of a technical job. But actually I learned probably about 10 years ago how to build circuits, and it was through photography that made me do that. Basically, I taught myself how to read a schematic and solder the darn thing together. What the project was back then was I was trying to build an automatic lightning camera so that I could have a camera. I built a little birdhouse at the time with a little 35 millimeter camera stuck inside with this lightning circuit. And it, anyways, long story short, that thing never worked because the battery kept dying. But I'd leave it out on a cliff for a couple months and see if anything, if it captured anything. But the circuit itself actually works. But so that was what actually sparked me into getting into soldering little circuits. So when this thing came along, just to build a sound trigger, it was a really basic circuit. So
I remember watching some of your videos that you did when you were on the road. Was it maybe a year or so ago, maybe a little longer? And
sure,
you'd got your camper set up, and you'd got your wind power going off, and you'd set cameras up with triggers to try and shoot some wildlife, and you do a lot of this sort of stuff, and you, it's great as well that you share a lot of that, and we can put a link to those videos in the show notes as well if people are interested. But it's great.
Sure.
Yeah,
those videos themselves. I mean, I do usually, if I go out on a little wildlife excursion, I'll do a travel video log.
Yeah.
Like basically me yakking at the camera. Okay, I'm going to try this and hope I don't get eaten by a bear and blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, they're quite dragged out. I mean, I think one of my series was like one of my week long or 10 day trips. I ended up putting together a 3-hour video or something. So, I mean, there's information in there, but it's kind of drawn out. If you have problems sleeping, go for it.
I watched them and I found them interesting. I know what you're saying. You know, it's some parts you're not, it's not like live action all of the time, but it's certainly interesting enough that you want to continue to watch. And then, you know, as you move through, it's kind of like a movie where you've got your in-between parts and then your bits of action and then your in-between parts. And so it works for me. I really enjoyed them.
Oh, cool. And you slept well that night. just kidding. But yeah, they're neat things to do. I mean, these days, did you want to talk a bit about wildlife stuff now?
Sure.
Because I could, because basically when I am on the road, I run into a lot of wildlife in northern BC, the Yukon and Northwest Territories. Mm. There's lots of bears and wolves and foxes and lynx and all kinds of animals. So when I am working, which I mentioned before, I spend about 80% of my time on the road working. I have my camera with me all the time. I have a work truck that's a Ford F-350. Mm. It's a nice big full-size truck. And right between the seats in the front, there's a little little spot to put stuff. And that's where I put my, these days, my D3S with a 1.7 times teleconverter and the 300 2.8 mil lens.
Nice.
So it gives me a 500 mil f4.8. So I'm pretty much ready for anything that comes out of the, you know, jumping across the road or whatever. Mm. But, and that does happen quite often. So I'm always ready for the wildlife.
Mm. So what we'll do is let's move on to that black wolf shot we're going to put into the blog post and that. So this is a great shot again, those beautiful yellow eyes. Let's tell us a little bit about this, where you shot it, how you came about this.
Sure. That was about a year ago, November. That was the first trip. Basically, wildlife photography, I've always kind of been interested, but in the last year and a half, I've been really focused on that's one of my main focuses these days, I guess, on with photography. Mm. So that was on one of my very first trips, specifically to go out looking for wildlife, and that's in Kootenay National Park in eastern British Columbia, almost at the Alberta border. Mm. And I'd driven around Banff and Jasper, a couple different places, and I ended up at Kootenay National Park, and I set up a blind for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And I was in a creek bed, and just the day before taking this picture, six wolves came by. I'd noticed a bunch of wolf prints in the sand, and I figured this was a good spot, so that's when I set up. But six wolves came by. They didn't get too close, probably a couple hundred meters. Mm. But so I snapped off a bunch of shots, and I also saw a couple more. They might have been the same wolves. They just kind of curved around. But so the next morning, I moved to a spot where I'd noticed them crossing the river. Mm. And that's where this guy came along. But the weird thing was, on that one, I wasn't quite ready. It was just barely getting light. Mm. And I had the blind set up and saw this black wolf. And I started clicking away. But I didn't up my ISO from the day before. It was still set at like 200 or something. So these shots, I had a series of these shots, and it was, I think I was shooting at like 1/30th of a second, but luckily it was on the tripod.
Yeah.
But it was a beautiful, that was actually the very first black wolf I'd ever seen. So
it is beautiful. Those yellow eyes are just piercing. You know, they're looking back in at the camera, and excellent shot.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, so wolves are one of my big focuses these days. That's definitely something I search out for.
Great.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you do. You're doing a great job with this stuff. So go on, sorry.
No, go ahead. No,
I was gonna say, next up, we've got a couple of wolf shots, but you've also got the black fox. The next image that we have to look at is the black fox that you put up there. So what tell us about this one.
Well, that one was, I was traveling between a place called Fort Nelson, British Columbia, up to Whitehorse, Yukon Territories, which is anywhere from a 10 to 12 hour drive, depending on how much snow is on the road. But you travel through the Northern Rockies, basically. You travel through there, and it's actually one of the better places, I'd say, even in British Columbia for wildlife. Just every time I do that drive, there are animals popping out all over the place.
Wow.
Usually a lot of caribou and stuff, but this particular black wolf was interesting. I actually had another guy with me who I work with. He was in a separate truck, and he has a camera as well, and we saw this fox running along the ditch. Mm. And we were passed by about 100 kilometers an hour, and thought, oh, hey, let's turn around. So by the time we turned around, we thought, oh, he's probably gone.
Yeah.
But what this guy actually did was we found him again, and he had just run right past us, not even really give us a second glance. We're just pulled over on the side of the road. Mm. So we blasted away with our cameras, and so we thought, okay, I'll drive ahead a couple hundred meters and pull over again and let him run by. And he kept doing this, and this went on for about 45 minutes. this he just kept going, and he'd stop every once in a while to hunt. and jump on things and look around things. And it was, yeah, pretty neat. That guy was pretty cool.
I'm sure he's a great looking fox. So I love in this image. I love the way he's got the grass seeds. He's sort of hooked his head around the grass seeds, looking back, which adds a nice context. You get a bit of an idea of the season, and you know it's not quite a straight shot. It works really well for me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure I took about 800 pictures that half an hour or 45 minutes of him running along. It was crazy.
And that's the thing with wildlife. Yeah, you generally tend to shoot a lot, and it's not really spraying and praying. It's just that you try to cover everything that you can that you think might work, and then select a few later.
Absolutely. On that one too, later on, I started stopping down a lot and turning down my ISO and doing some panning shots. And you know how those work. I mean, 1 in 10 work out, but this guy was he was just, I don't know, such a good subject.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of foxes and they're not always friendly. Like once they see you, they might just run into the bush, but this guy just kind of glanced at us once in a while and didn't seem to care.
Wow.
Which was great.
We get red fox in Hokkaido a lot on my tour that I take up there, and that they're always great animals. But something like you say, some of them they'll see you and they'll just dip over a hedge and they're gone. You know, the banking or something. Others they'll hang around and give you a bit of a show. So it's certainly hit and miss with foxes.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just one of the things. I mean, sometimes you get good ones, sometimes you don't. And
yeah. Absolutely.
That one was cooperative anyways.
Yeah. So the next one that we have here is a white wolf. This is a captive one I see from your caption. Tell us about this.
On my second trip out to Kootenay National Park, I think it was 6 months after the first trip, I drove out there, and from Vancouver, it's about 800, 900 kilometers one way. So that whole trip, I spent about a week trying to get more wolf shots from around the same spot that I got the black wolf. Mm-hmm. So I think altogether I drove about 2,200 kilometers that trip. And on my way back, I actually found some captive wolves out near there. They had a wolf center. Mm-hmm. And I ended up taking some pictures, but that's not where this guy's from. When I got back, my brother said, "Oh, you didn't get any wolf shots? You got some, you know, captive wolves?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, spent 10 days or whatever out there looking, staying." It's tough when you're like 12 hours in a blind waiting for something to come by. Mm. But anyways, he goes, "Oh, well, you know, 10 minutes away from where you live, they have those wolves over at the Grouse Mountain Wolf Center." I'm like, "Oh, no." So anyways, that's where this guy's from. I went over there. And actually, ever since then, whenever I'm in town briefly, I can't take my 600 mil lens out on the road. So it's always nice to shoot something. And this is a captive wolf at this wolf display. They were actually bred for the movie industry.
Oh, wow.
And they actually ended up being bad actors. But long story short, they ended up at this 2-acre kind of plot of land or a tourist trap, I guess. But yeah. That's pretty cool. They're neat animals. I mean, you're not guaranteed to get a shot. I've been there before, and the 2 hours I've been there, they appear for about 5 minutes and then go have a nap. So
they make great subjects. And this one, I mean, you've got a nice tight crop on the wolf's on the left side of the frame. You've clipped the ears off there a little, and I know that some wildlife photographers are going to say, "Oh yeah, but you've got to have the ears in." I disagree. I love the way you're doing this. And some of your shots are really, really tight, just the eyes and the nose. And I really enjoy looking at your work. For me, I mean, obviously, you'll know from my own work that I really enjoy the shallow depth of field and the creamy bokeh and all of that. And I think that your work to me is appealing because you get that as well. You don't try and get everything in focus. And of course, it's difficult with a long lens because you automatically get a shallow depth of field.
I tend to always shoot always either wide open or just stop down a little bit. And again, I guess you should know too. You'll miss shots with some action. Like you'll get, "Oh, it's a little bit blurry," or focus didn't quite get it. But that totally appeals to me. And I hear what you're saying about your work. It's amazing.
Wow. Thanks.
Shallow depth of field. It's just some of your field shots and your flowers. I mean, I just can't even imagine. can't do it.
That's the flowerscapes and things. They take a little bit of getting used to, and they look simple, but when you try it yourself, they can be a little bit tricky. But I don't think it's difficult. It's just a certain eye and You know, a lot of people are trying that, and I'm seeing some really nice ones coming out as well. So,
oh, absolutely! Actually, that we had the theme there with the flowerscapes, and I don't know if you recall the one I did for that.
Was the one with the water?
No, that was the one with the fake flowers.
Oh,
put the moon behind it.
Got you.
Sorry, I thought I'd bring that up.
wasn't that one of your shots where you'd got a flower in the rain and. And
oh, that too, yeah.
That's one of my favorite flower shots that I recall of yours. That's a beautiful shot.
Thank you. That was done with a garden hose, just spraying away. But because rain, I mean, it's amazing. Rain doesn't really come out that well sometimes. So, yeah, that was kind of faked. So yeah,
it works really, really, really well.
Oh, thank you.
So the last image that we were going to look at before we start talking about your videos is the lynx shot. Tell us about this.
Oh, lynx. Lynx are a cool animal. They're related to the bobcat. I think they're called Canadian lynx or Canada lynx. Mm. But they're basically wild cats. And the one we're looking at now is a captive one. But I've taken pictures of a lot of them in the wild. But they mainly feed on Arctic hare rabbits.
Got it.
And they're really cool animals. But they're very shy. I haven't found one that's not shy yet. Mm. So a lot of people don't see them, and it's always a pleasure to see them. One thing I have learned over the last year, it's almost learning stuff from hunting techniques on how to get animals out. But I do have and some people might say it's cheating, which maybe it is, but being a techno geek that I am, I've got an animal caller thing.
Yeah.
Basically, it does animal calls. It's a little speaker that you put out in the middle of a field and from 200 meters away or whatever, you can punch in different animal distress calls. And so predators come out to have a look at, you know, a wounded rabbit or whatever, but yeah. At least with I'm not a hunter, so at least they have a happy ending. They just get their picture taken and walk away. But so it's pretty neat. And also when I'm working on the road, like I know the lynx are there, especially up near the Fort Nelson, British Columbia area, which is northern BC. Mm. I've got a couple trail cameras which will automatically take pictures of whatever walks by the camera.
Yeah.
Again used by hunters to scout out areas. So I've actually got three of those now. So it's pretty neat when you set up a little camera in the woods, and then, you know, a week later you come back and see what walked by. And those are pretty neat too. So
wow.
I've got one that does HD video, and the other one too I have do stills and video. And it's just kind of fun to see what's out there.
It's amazing. Really, really cool. This shot here, you know, such a cool look on his face. It's they although they're feline, it's almost got a wolf like look as well. Yeah, just a really really rugged looking cool animal to look at. And I'm envious that you're managing to photograph these guys. I'd love to get some of these.
Oh, they are neat, and I do like cats. I guess I'm a more of a cat person, I guess. But I have gone to try to photograph cougars in the wild.
Wow.
Mountain lions, I guess they're called as well. But close by me here, Vancouver Island, it's got one of the most, or I think it is the most dense population of cougars in North America.
Yeah.
Apparently there's 1,400 cougars over there. But I've gone twice for 10 days each time, and I haven't photographed one yet. Mm. But I'm still trying.
Yeah.
I've seen prints. I've seen scats. I should mention that there's a great little app for the iPhone or iPad or whatever, but it's called Scats and Tracks. Yeah, they have a North American version. I guess they have other versions all around the world. But basically, it's great because you see some tracks. You go, what the heck is that? And you just look up the different track types, and you can pretty much tell, oh, that's a bear or that's a mountain lion. So I'm definitely learning animal stuff still. I'm definitely a rookie there, but it's been interesting.
Amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, knowing the attention to detail that you have. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how your wildlife progresses as well. So continue to post in the MBP forums and in the galleries, and you know I'll be following that and looking forward to seeing, because you're already making great wildlife shots, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out next.
Oh, thank you.
So you're welcome. So let's bring David back in, and let's have a quick chat about your videos, because you've both been doing some amazing time-lapse work, and obviously we can't look at them sort of while we're talking here, but as I said earlier, I will embed a couple of these into the blog post. But I think that the first one, I don't remember if it was the very first, but your Vancouver City video was incredibly popular, and I looked at the view count earlier, and you're just about to click over 2 million views. So obviously I'm not alone in thinking that this is an amazing video, but can you tell us a little bit about the, you know, how that came about?
Sure. You're on there, David?
Oh, I'm here.
You want to go
take
for
that
it?
Or should I take that? I'll go for it. Okay. We had been doing or got back into time-lapse photography but a couple years before that video came out. And I mean, we initially first started doing time-lapses or attempted to do it in high school or just after high school. And those days it was film and it was tough to do. But we got back into it when the technology kind of got a lot easier to do time lapses, and we were doing some time lapses for a couple years, and we had a lot of footage of Vancouver because that's where we live. And how the video came about was we put them on YouTube. We had, you know, a bunch of YouTube videos just with computer generated kind of music, and it was awful music, but anyways, we had a bunch of videos up, and the people who put the song together, the Vancouver City song, saw the videos and said, hey, we have, you know, music that we think will go good with your video. So we did a little collaboration and put it together, and just before the Olympics and in Vancouver, and it sort of went viral, and yeah, we're just coming up to 2 million views.
Yeah. So I was going to ask about the music, because I didn't know that you'd been approached by someone, you know, that had already got the music. So that's pretty incredible that they saw your video first and then got in touch with you. Because, I mean, it really does complement the video.
Yeah, it does. And that's why we ended up doing it. When they approached us, we listened to the song and said, yeah, that'll fit. And 5 days later, I had it all edited and posted. But, yeah, it was amazing. They had the song without the video, and we had the video without the song, and then it just came together.
Mm. And I watched it again a couple of times this morning. You've got it up there in 1080p and I full screen on my monitor, and it blows me away. I mean, I've got really good speakers hooked up to my computer here, and it just filled the room with the music. I've got the visual. I'm sitting here in heaven. You know, it's really, really an amazing video. And what I want to do is I just tell, as I said, what we'll do is we'll embed this in the blog post, but also you can take a look at Dan and David's videos. Let me just check the... let me go back here. And so if you just want to type this in, you can find them on YouTube by searching for Time-lapse HD. And we'll put a link into the show notes and embed the videos and stuff. But Time-lapse HD, and we'll take you to Dan and David's channel. David, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, we've heard from Dan earlier. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and how come you're so good at all of this video stuff? And
because he's related to me. That's Dan speaking. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, come on now. I'm the less disturbed twin, I think.
No, thank you.
But no, it's funny. We both enjoyed photography in high school, and after high school, it's like, what do you do for a living, right? So, anyways, I got into the video side of things. Danny stayed in the still photography side. Hmm. Right now, I'm working at a TV station in Vancouver. I'm a news cameraman, so I'm running around grabbing the news. That's what I do for a full time job, and you know, we both have full time jobs. So the time lapse and the photography is just sort of a hobby, I guess, but yeah, I don't know. That's me.
That's
pretty short, but
yeah, no, not at all. I do recall hearing about your job there, and so that's why I asked the question. I think it's great that you're involved in doing something professionally, and then also can do something related but different enough to keep you sort of interested and engaged as a hobby. And I think your sensitivity, both of you, obviously you work together to capture the image and everything, the images, but your sensitivity to, you know, how you capture the stills that you link together for your time lapse and everything really, really comes together well. You're collaborating in an amazing way. But can you tell us a little bit, either of you, do you find it, are there any challenges that you, obviously, I mean, being brothers, you're open to sort of rib each other at any possible chance. And and so I'm sure that you have a lot of fun doing it. But are there any challenges that you've found working together on these time lapses?
No, actually, it works pretty good for me because, I do some of the post-production stuff for the videos. Or not post, I guess, getting some images ready and stuff. And I just leave all the long hours and months of editing to David. So it works good for me. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing. People say, oh, that must have taken a long time to shoot. Well, the shooting part's the quickest part, let me tell you. Our latest video I'm still working on, we basically, it was maybe 6 hours of shooting, and the last three months I've been trying to put it together, but it is a lot of time in post, especially this latest one we're doing. It's gonna be 4K, which is like full resolution, so it's roughly about 11 megapixel images in video, so it's just monstrous files. We're doing it in 3D, so then that basically triples the amount of work, because not only do you have the one camera, you've got the two cameras, and you got to match them up and, you know, with color and everything else. And it just takes a long time.
I can imagine. So that's the, and I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, but that's the great Reno balloon race, is it? Or Reno?
Yeah.
No,
it's Reno. Yeah, it's like it's in Nevada. It's like Las Vegas and Reno. There's two sort of gambling cities, but the Reno. It's the great Reno balloon race, and hopefully I'm still having some uploading issues. But you guys still there?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, I had some weird noise come through. Sorry,
it wasn't me.
Okay. The where was I? The
Yeah, uploading the new video.
Oh, just
and
the
stuff.
Uploading that. Yeah, it's just a lot of work. But we should have that one online in the next day or two.
Okay. Well, so, if people come along to the blog when we release this, I'll be releasing it in a couple of days after we record it. But if people come along and it's not there, just check back, because I've had a preview of the balloon race video, and it really is. It's a great follow up. It lives up to everything that the Vancouver one did. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how they, because I'm sure this one will be very popular as well. And just to note that, you know, I learned from Dan and David yesterday that just because it's in 3D doesn't mean that you necessarily need a lot of equipment. So can you tell us a little bit about the technical side of that, guys? How people will be able to watch it, or, you know, is there a 2D version, things like that?
Sure. There's a couple different ways you can do it. The YouTube offer hosts the 3D, and you can choose different ways of viewing it. If you have, you know, red and blue glasses, you can watch it. If you have a 3D television, you can pump it over to that and use whatever glasses you have for your TV. You can watch it in 2D. I mean, it doesn't, just because it's in 3D, you can turn the 3D off and watch it in 2D. But we'll probably be putting up two videos. One will be the 3D, and then we'll be putting up the 4K 2D one. So if you wanted to watch, and no one's even got these TVs, but if you wanted to watch, what was it, 4,000 some odd megapixel or pixels wide by 2,300 pixels high, you can watch it. It's about four times the size of or the resolution of HD TV. But yeah, there's different ways to view it on YouTube. They make it pretty easy. But I know not everybody has a 3D TV or glasses. That's why we're putting it up in 2D as well. Yeah. But it's the same. The guy who did the Vancouver City music on that video, he wrote this song just for us.
Oh,
for
excellent.
The Great Reno Balloon Race. So he's Serge. So he's doing that one. And then we've got another one coming out that we've done a bit of post on, but still have to put it together. Another 3D one from our trip.
That one's got a lot of moonscapes and desert scenes and ghost towns and and things like that we shot all in a trip at the end of September, early October.
Or was that when we did it?
Yeah, late September.
Yeah.
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 We try to do a trip a year and go down south usually and go to Utah and New Mexico and all kinds of different areas, and sort of gather stuff. And we normally put out about maybe a video a year, maybe two. I don't know.
Yeah,
not that many, but
we're kind of slow.
What sort of equipment do you use? I remember seeing a few years ago, I saw pictures of dollies the rails and things that you use. What sort of gear do you use to actually shoot the video?
I'll let David answer that one because he built all of that. So go ahead, David.
I think I'm doing all the work here. I'm doing the editing.
Yeah, I know, I like it.
Making all the equipment. We do make.
I'm out of town.
Well, we do make most of our equipment, the support gear. Like we've got tilt and pan heads, which are controlled by electronics and that, and so you can adjust the speed and direction of the tilt and speed and direction of the pan during. So it'll take a picture, move, take a picture, move, take a picture, move, and then you put those together in post, and it's a pan or a tilt. We do have. Got a dolly that I built that we've got a 14-foot track for it, and it can go vertical or any kind of angle you want. What else do we have? Railing crawler. Yeah, we just made up that name, but there's this nice bridge in Vancouver that's got this really flat handrail, and it goes over over the inlet, and it looks a great view from there. I was driving over there one day and I kind of looked over and go, hey, that'd make a neat dolly shot. And so I built this thing and called it the railing crawler. And it was funny because I looked at the railing. I thought, it's about 4 or 5 inches wide. And so I built this thing. And a month later, I go and try it. And the railing was 6 inches wide. It didn't fit. It's like, man. So anyways, I went back and made some adjustments and came back. But that thing, it basically does the same kind of thing. You put the camera on it. It's motorized. It's got a battery. It's got the intervalometer. So you can adjust the speed and direction and how often it takes a picture. So you just clamp it onto the railing and away you go, and it just moves its way down the railing. And in post, you got to do some stabilization software, because railings look smooth, but once you put a camera on it, and it's bouncing all over the place. But
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when I was actually doing one of those shots, the police stopped and said, what are you doing? Some lady had phoned from one of the buildings saying that I had a camera and I was looking in her apartment. And anyways, I had to show the officers what I was doing. It was this weird kind of contraption moving along the railing, and said, look, it's a wide shot. I'm not doing anything. But it's funny, because then I looked in post and I saw the wide shot of the building. You see this one apartment where someone's like darting around, and then the drapes close. And I said, that was probably her.
So I was going to ask, what sort of interval do you shoot? Because you're ending up with something that, 25 frames a second or 30 frames a second?
Yeah, we do 30 frames a second for North America. But normally, most, like in the Vancouver City video, like the fog shots, for example, they're about 4 second intervals, roughly 3 second shutter speeds. You try, if there's like say traffic in the shot, you want the streaks of the lights to, you want the longest shutter speeds you can in between the intervals. So that's what you try to do, so that it's capturing more light. And it usually, we can do night shots, and that's the nice thing about time lapse, turning them into videos, or doing still photography and turning it into video. You can do long exposures.
Yeah.
Like we'll do 30 second exposures for like a starry night, and picks up all the stars. So it's a nice way to do it. You'd never get that in just doing regular video.
So you're intriguing me now again. If you do a 30 second shot, what's the gap between them? Do you sort of close the shutter, let the camera process the image, and then you, within how many seconds are you taking the next shot?
We do have the noise reduction off, because it'll take, like if you did a 30-second shot, it'll take 30 seconds. So usually we try to get it as close as possible to the shutter speed to the interval. So if we do a 30-second shot, we might do a 30, the intervals would be like every 32 seconds or something.
Okay.
Or 31, whatever.
Depending on the shutter speed too, like during the day, a crowded street shot or something, people walking, you want the intervals really close. So we can actually do 1 second intervals. Occasionally you'll have to go to JPEGs instead of RAWs, because depending on the speed of your card. But anywhere from 1 to 30 seconds. And you can do intervals like normally, know, you see the ones with the flowers blooming and this and that, and those are longer exposures, or, you know, the sun comes up and goes down in one shot. You know, we normally do quicker ones that we're like, we do a 4 second intervals. We need, okay, we're doing 30 frames a second in video. So to do a 10 second shot, we need 300 pictures. If we do, there's a math in here, but anyway, I don't want to get too complicated, but basically to do a 4 second interval shot and we want 10 seconds, you times it by 5. So it'll take us 20 minutes to do
10 seconds of video.
A 10 second shot at 4 second intervals. So just roughly, it's confusing, but
you've explained it very well. So I'm sure everyone will understand about that.
And there's apps for that too.
There's an app for that.
Yeah. Yeah, for everything.
There's an app for everything. Yeah.
Okay, this is brilliant. I really do. You know, I'm looking forward to hearing what people say when they see the Reno balloon race images as well. And it just blew me away when I watched that yesterday. And so you've got the other one with the desert footage coming out later. And roughly how long is that? I'm going to put you on the spot here. You know, roughly how long that's going to be?
It depends if he gets any sleep or not. Yeah.
I'd say 3 months, maybe, because we're going to get Serge to write some original music for it as well. So it'll take us maybe a month to get the music, and then maybe another month or two to put it together.
Got you.
So 3 months. We'll say 3 months.
Yeah. So let's everybody keep your eye on the time-lapse HD feed for that. And you can see also some of the gear that we were talking about earlier. And let's see, where's that? So Dan and David have this up on timelapsehd.ca.
Or actually .com. We've got both domains. Okay. And our webmaster is, as we speak, putting together our latest version of our website. So, we hope to have it up real quick.
Okay, so I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. But thanks so much, guys. It's been a pleasure talking with you today, and I think that the listeners are going to enjoy seeing your photography. And also, note that David is also active in the MBP galleries as well. So you've been placed.
He's done quite well, actually, in the assignments. Exactly.
Yeah,
I took a little break, but I haven't actually posted anything for about 6 months. But I'm Shutter on there. That's my username. But
so I'm sure.
Oh, and I really enjoy them. I want to get back into them because they're great. I love the monthly assignments, and it kind of forces you to get out there and do it. And it's just with this balloon festival thing and all the 3D editing, I don't have time.
I'm sure.
But I will. I'm going to make some time and get back into it with my daughter.
Head-to-head competition.
Yep.
Oh yeah, there we go.
We've got the three Newcombs in there doing, taking all of the votes and showing everybody how to do it.
No. But thank you. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Really, it's been a pleasure, and I hope that we see you online again soon. Really, thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Martin. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thanks very much to everybody for listening today. Remember that you can find me as well on Google+ and Twitter. All of the links are in the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye. Okay.
Hey, Mert. Oh, man. Oh, God. I hope I didn't have too much verbal diarrhea. I see we went over.
Not at all. I think I see on the clock we're just over an hour, and we chatted for a bit. We're an hour and 10 minutes. I think it's perfect.
If you want to get under an hour, you can feel free to take out that toilet comment.
Toilet or half of my answers. So, yeah.
No, really, it's great. I'm sure that people are going to enjoy that a lot. So thanks again so much, guys, for your time. And
I hope it made sense.
It did. It's going to be great.
Oh, well, thank you again, Martin. It's a real pleasure to have us on there. That was great.
Yeah, it was awesome. And that weird noise that I heard, it was actually my rendering finished for the latest version. It went bling. I'm going, what was that? Because anyways. But So now I just have to upload it, and hopefully it'll upload right. But I'd say probably about a week from now, this thing will be up, just to be on the safe side. So it won't make it up for the actual podcast airing, but it'll be next week sometime.
I'll add it as soon as you. If you drop me a line once it's up, I'll try and poll for it. But if you drop me a line, I'll add a, sure. I'll add a link and everything as soon as it's up.
Great. Okay,
all right. Good.
Right. Well, thanks again, Martin. That's nervous as hell, but
you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyways, you're too kind.
All right. Well, really, thanks a lot, guys, and I'll speak to you again soon. Okay.
You bet. Take care.
Thanks.
Cheers, then. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.